You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
Let's get it on!
How's it going, everybody? Andrew Zarian here, Wrestling Observer Live. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, and Sundays, 6 p.m. Eastern. We're back live on Sports Byline, and it's a Sunday at 6 p.m. East. That's for Lance Storm, by the way. He yells at me. Every time I call it East, he says, what are you doing? It's not East. It's Eastern. 6 p.m. Eastern. Boy, we got a lot to talk about here today. Last week, we were on just on FRW, but we were talking about Royal Rumble. There's a lot of new stuff that came out of this over the last week. The Shane McMahon debacle. The utter chaos that people had to deal with at the Royal Rumble. There's a lot that came out, which we're going to talk about today. Also, WWE earnings call. I'm going to be joined by Brandon Thurston, the man when it comes to these things. You know, I was putting out the ratings for a little bit, but I gave it up. I got tired of seeing the comments. So I'm going to have Brandon out to talk about the state of professional wrestling television in North America, especially. And of course, the earnings, the most profitable quarter for WWE. I mean, this is a company that's making more money hand over fist than anything else. Most profitable year for WWE came out of a pandemic, and the pandemic year was fantastic for them, and now 2021 was great for them. So we're going to talk about that and what that means really for professional wrestling, what that means for the company itself, because sometimes we see things as a fan, and it's not really, we're kind of blinded by it because we're watching the product. But when we talk about the earnings and we talk about what that means on the corporate side, it's a little bit different. Also, SmackDown and Rampage highlights. MJF CM Punk went like 40 minutes. Great match. Couple ref spots I wasn't too crazy about, but I thought it was a fantastic match. Obviously, getting into Elimination Chamber also, we're going to talk about because there's a lot of changes coming to that. Just a very interesting week. You know, sometimes we got these really, really busy weeks. Other times, it's kind of slow. It's not the case for this week, guys. We're headed to a break. Brandon Thurston coming on with me once we get back. Wrestling Observer Live. Andrew Zarian here. We'll be right back after this.
You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
You know, that was a total lie. I'm not Mike or Brian Alvarez. Wouldn't mind it, you know? Two very successful guys. Andrew Zarian here, Wrestling Observer Live. I'm joined by Brandon Thurston here. Brandon, are you here?
I'm here.
Ah, look at
thanks.
You. You know, I got to tell
thanks
you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Listen, I want to, before we get into all the nitty gritty, I want to thank you for the service you do for the entire wrestling community. You put these numbers out. You're on top of this. This morning, I think you had like a three-hour broadcast going over the earnings call. I was glued to it. I really, because I find these things fascinating. My co-hosts on Mat Men, not so much into the numbers. So for me to be able to sit here and talk to you about all the numbers stuff, I find, it's my own. This is like a pleasure for me. So I really appreciate you coming on to go over this stuff, because a lot of this is very fascinating stuff.
Yeah, especially since AEW's come along. There's more interest in ratings than ever. It's become sort of, to some wrestling fans, it's become sort of a utility. You need your wrestling television, water, electricity, and TV ratings. But thanks again for having me. Just watching you work the real radio in the last few minutes has been watching a sport of its own.
It really is, man. You got to see. Like I'm spinning plates. Nobody could see. They're listening on the radio, but I got like 10 spinning plates right now. So let's go into this a little bit. It was a record $1.095 billion reported.
Yes.
I mean, this is astronomical numbers for this company. Fourth quarter revenue increased by 30% to $310.3 million. Operating income revenue increased 131% to $83.6 billion. I mean, we could go into this, but what was some of the nitty-gritty from this earnings call that you picked up on?
Well, the big headline is that this is the most profitable year that WWE has ever had. The most profit, I'd measure that by net income. That's sort of the most final measure of profit. They made $180 million in revenue. They hit $1 billion for the first time ever. And even if you adjust for inflation, that is more than they made in their most popular eras. If you go back to the Attitude Era, and if you adjust that to today's 2021 dollars, that I know it's 2022, but I adjusted it for 2021. But if you go back to the Attitude Era, their most profitable years ever were 99 and 2000, and that would have been about 91 to $93 million in net income. And again, 180. So they basically doubled what the Attitude Era was, and they broke their record, which was set last year during the pandemic, the year of 2020. That was, they had no ticketed live events beginning in the middle of March through the rest of the year. But this year was very profitable, and they made over $1 billion, largely driven by their increasing TV rights fees that just increase every year. That's how the contracts are written. That's how the US one is written. And that's probably how some of the international agreements are written as well. Not really dependent on not at all dependent on what the TV viewership is. They're guaranteed escalating TV rights fees that are guaranteeing WWE to make more and more money over time, because live sports are extremely valuable in this environment.
Right. And it's rare to come across, right? Because everybody's locked up into long-term deals. Everybody gets locked into a 4-year deal, 3-year deal, 10-year deal, whatever, depending on the sporting brand. But, some of these things is very interesting. First of all, we are no longer in a gate business. Even though I believe merch sales had an increase for the first time in a very long time. I forgot where I saw this, but apparently for the longest time, I think it was like an average spend of $10 per person that was attending an event. And I think it went up by 50 cents. So they're actually, even though their gate is lower because it's less people going to the events, they're spending more money. And some of that is maybe equated to the fact that they have way more merchandise available nowadays, or the fact that people, it's diehards and they're spending way more money at these events. Where do you think that falls in line?
Well, venue merch per capita was $12 in this quarter.
$12.
It was
okay.
Up to it was $14 in Q3. That's the July, August, September quarter where they had just returned to touring, and there was a lot of pent up demand and a lot of enthusiasm for their events, and $14 per head down to 12. And I think that's more reflective of what the regular price is going to be going forward. The last, let's look at Q4 2019, it was $9 per head. So some of that's inflation, I suppose. But just more people spending more money. And the average attendance is a bit down in Q4 versus the Q4 of 2014. They averaged, I believe, 5,200 in paid attendance in North America versus, I believe it's 5,400 or 5,800. So if average attendance was a little bit down per event, and maybe you've just got more hardcore fans left that's pushing that average up, and maybe a little bit of inflation, just maybe some prices are going up on merchandise. But yeah, they're venue merch per capita is up.
So looking at the conference call, where do you see the growth for WWE when it comes to 2022? Obviously the rights fees are going to go up for the next set of contracts that they're going to sign for television, because that's just how the nature of television is headed right now, where everybody's getting more and more
probably.
Money. But probably. Where do you see, as far as the business goes, when you look at this, the trajectory for 2022, what stood out to you? Was there anything that stood out with this conference call where you could say, okay, you know what, this is where they're going to maybe change some stuff?
Nick Khan hyped that, the president and chief revenue officer of WWE, Nick Khan hyped that they have over a dozen pieces of scripted and unscripted content that they're going to announce. It sounds like media content. I don't know if that's documentaries or what they've got in store. So that's one area of growth where they have all of these, not just, obviously they're monetizing their weekly wrestling programs and their premium live events monthly through NBC Universal and through Fox and through international distributors, but they're also selling other kinds of programming to other, whether it's streaming platforms or networks. We saw the A&E deal that happened in 2021. So there's incremental growth happening there. And there's other ways that they're growing revenue incrementally too. They're supposed to roll out an NFT marketplace soon with Fox. And I think it's Bento Box. There's going to be a 2K game coming out that should drive some revenue if it's a good game. But yeah, they have opportunities in gaming. They have small deals, like they're introducing lottery tickets, scratch off lottery tickets. But there's a lot of these little deals that Nick Khan is well suited to make, and his team of people are well suited to help WWE make, in addition to Nick Khan and his people being especially well suited to negotiate favorable TV rights deals for them going forward. And I should add to you that the network is obviously in the US on Peacock, but they have other deals to make internationally. The biggest one that just happened is the Disney Hotstar deal in Indonesia.
Very interesting.
Which is maybe worth a decent amount of money, maybe not. It's not clear. You know, they don't disclose everything that we could possibly want to know. But that's another big area for growth, is what kind of deals can they make internationally to distribute the W Network content.
You know, and I think that's the advantage that they have over AEW right now, is the fact that they have this embedded product that people recognize, and they could get really, you know, decent international deals here. You know, that's really where this kind of falls into place for WWE over AEW, because AEW, listen, they're a couple years old. The product is not as recognizable as something that's been around for 50 plus years, or even modern wrestling, the last 20 some odd years where we got this boom period. So very interesting stuff. I'm really fascinated to see what this does, because when you really talk about WWE programming on television, the ratings are not going up, but the rights fees are. And generally, you know, you don't necessarily see that too often, but like you said, we're in a very different world where sports content is highly in demand.
Mm-hmm. They would argue that their linear, their traditional TV viewership may be down, but their engagement and digital viewership in other ways is up. I think it's a complicated story, but even if television viewership for them is down, they're still among the most popular programs on TV. When you look at the rankings that places like Showbiz Daily publish of the daily top cable originals, now that football is out of the way for the last 2 weeks, the top three slots are those 3 hours of Raw on cable among the original programs. So Raw and SmackDown on Friday are among the most popular programs with viewers 18 to 49. And that's really valued, even if when we look at year-over-year comparisons, viewership is down, even if Raw just recorded some of its lowest demo viewership numbers ever.
Hey, we're going to come back right after this, but I want to talk about viewership in North America and what that means for professional wrestling. Wrestling Observer Live, Andrew Zarin here. We'll be right back after this. Wrestling Observer Live, Andrew Zarian here, talking to Brandon Thurston, talking about the earnings call, ratings, and everything else that we heard during that call. Weekly ratings, which I want to go into. SmackDown overnights, 2.06 million, down due to the Olympics. Raw, 1.865, up from 1.766. NXT and Dynamite. NXT did 593, I believe, and Dynamite did 954. Brandon, you know, there's a lot of talk over the numbers, right? People, it becomes a big argument online about what the numbers mean and why they were down, and South Park debuted and football was on and NXT's, you know, who knows what was going on Tuesday. You know, when you look at these numbers, and you and I have had numerous conversations about this, you know, what overnights are, what the actual numbers
Fast
are.
Fast Nationals.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, these live numbers really don't mean anything to the viewer. They mean something to an advertiser on what you could get for the viewership at that hour competitively against other products on TV. But when we look at as far as popularity goes, how should we measure this when we talk about television ratings?
Well, I think that if we're talking about the difference between WWE and AEW, I mean, AEW's viewership is younger. About half of their viewership is in the demo of 18 to 49. That's the demographic that determines the ad rates, most of the ad rates. So some ads, you can kind of tell if it's prescription drugs, it's probably a P50 plus ad. But a lot of the ads, especially the more valuable ads, are 18 to 49. And in 1849, Raw and Dynamite are getting pretty close. I think there's three occasions now where Dynamite and Live same day just barely edged out Raw. But, you know, WWE is still a far more recognizable brand. They have a much larger total viewership, mostly driven by people over the age of 50. But WWE is still this far more recognizable brand, which, you know, shows itself in a lot of different ways, especially maybe in this older TV audience that they have that watches it more readily than they watch WWE, maybe just because it's this older brand that has existed and dominated the scene since 2001. I know you're asking about DVR viewership and how much does that change the picture. I got my hands on some DVR viewership towards the end of last year, and we can see sort of what are the percentage lifts that DVR viewership for the following 7 days gives. And for Raw, it's in terms of total viewership, it gives it something like a 13% lift. For SmackDown, it's like an 11% lift. For Dynamite, so this is, let's say, October, a 22% lift for Dynamite, a 32% lift for Rampage. I guess because Rampage is later, maybe more people miss it. There's a larger percentage of DVR viewership happening there. And in the case of NXT, it's about 12%. So I don't know what that says about the viewership. We can only speculate that maybe people are going out of their way if they miss a program to watch AEW more so than they are the WWE programs. I think in Rampage, it's just a case of in that 10 o'clock time slot, people miss it quite a bit, and some people make an effort to catch up with it.
So another thing is, you know, a lot of this is Nielsen numbers as well. Right. That plays a big part in this. So I know YouTube TV participates in Nielsen, I guess, statistics and analytics. So does Hulu Live. But what happens to the on-demand content on Hulu? Is that incorporated in this at all? And even for AEW, anything that's on demand, is that incorporated at all in these numbers when we discuss them?
No. If you're watching Raw on the USA Network or Fox on or SmackDown on Fox or AEW on TNT or CBS, whatever way you're watching, whether it's through traditional cable or satellite, or whether it's through the virtual MVPD, which is YouTube TV, Hulu Live, Sling, you are being counted. I don't know if you're being counted or not, but you could be in the sample that Nielsen collects and then extrapolates onto the whole population to give these numbers that we see. But next day viewership on Hulu is not a part of that. Watching clips on YouTube are not a part of that. I've been doing some scraping of the YouTube viewership lately. I just tweeted a table today, you know, looking at let's take the last 7 days of the new content on YouTube for both WWE and AEW, and look at, you know, how many views are the clips of the shows getting, and the top slots are usually dominated by WWE, but sometimes in the top five there's an AEW clip in there. So the new content is between WWE and AEW is sometimes close. There's definitely quite a few AEW clips within, let's say, the top 20. But when we look at what WWE's YouTube channel overall does in a given week or any period of time, it's massively way ahead of AEW, which is the next nearest channel. I don't think Impact is up there as much, even though they probably have more subscribers on their channel. But the vast library of content that WWE has on its YouTube channel alone, I think it's something like 59,000 uploads that they have, because they've been on YouTube since day one, practically. There's this massive archive of library content that's on their YouTube channel that accounts for, at least in the last week, and I think this is typical of what's happening normally, 70% of the views that they get in a given period of time are of content that's at least a week, more than a week old. So it could be years old. So there's that advantage they have, at least in terms of collecting YouTube views, which probably means something like $20 to $30 million a year. Maybe that's even grown. You know, YouTube just put out a report on its ad revenue, and it's generating in Q4, it generated more ad revenue than Netflix generated in subscriber revenue, which was pretty fascinating to me.
Very interesting stuff. You know, also saturating the content. You said 59,000 clips they have on there. AEW, you know, and they also probably, and this is me to knowing how WWE's structure works on that side of content, they are very in tune with how to present that content and when they upload. Like, they don't upload just random stuff, right? Like, I'll give an example. Just yesterday, they uploaded a Asuka versus Bayley video, right? There's supposed to be some synergy there with the TV product. They're supposed to remind you that these two exist and they're coming soon. You know, everything that they do kind of is intuitive with that. But, you know, also 14-year, 12-year, whatever the terms are for YouTube, they have an advantage. They've been there for a while. They have a partnership agreement with them. They have meetings with them. AEW is just getting started with this. You know, not, it doesn't say much as far as AEW not doing well, but what is this? Where is the viewership coming from? Because for the longest time, the stigma was, well, those viewers are international viewers. They're not North American viewers, the most of them. But I don't know if that's true anymore.
I've been told by some people who are Indian wrestling fans that the YouTube clips are geo-blocked in India for the first 24 hours. It's the latest that W has ever said publicly about this is that 30% of the YouTube viewership or the digital engagement that they get is from the US. So 70% of it is international. And if you look at their, even this includes their latest report, I think 80% of their revenue was North America. Their entire picture of revenue, 80% of it was North America and only 20% of it was international. So that gives you sort of a dichotomy of they're a very international product, at least when you look at them digitally, but where they're getting their money from is from North America, which largely because of the economies that are the difference in the economies between the US and just about everybody else, where, you know, a lot of the ads that they sell, the more lucrative ads that they sell are from the US. You know, when you look at the integrations, which was a big talking point on this earnings call, the integrations that they have with whether it's Red Notice, the Netflix show, Jackass, with having Johnny Knoxville. I just heard in the news update that Jackass was the number one movie this week. So there's a lot of that. And they're putting all that stuff on their premium live events, now they're called. And another big talking point from the earnings call is how much viewership on Peacock has increased versus the US viewership on the WWE Network when those events were just on the direct-to-consumer WWE Network.
But no exact numbers, though. We don't get exact viewership numbers. Yeah, that's the big secret number. That's the secret sauce. They don't tell you that.
That's right.
I'm sure they tell their advertisers, but there was about, I think it was like 20 to 30% depending on the pay-per-view, the PLE. But except for one, and that was Crown Jewel, that saw a 70% increase in viewership over 2019 numbers. I think the 2019 one was took place on Halloween, so maybe that makes a little bit sense that it was such a big increase compared to the other pay-per-views. But what did you make of that?
When the W Network as a direct-to-consumer service in the United States shut down, they had 1.1 million subscribers. The peak was in 2018 when they had 1.3 million in the WrestleMania quarter. So when you're on Peacock, Peacock just reported, and Comcast reported in their earnings call a week or two ago, that there's 9 million paid subscribers, independent of the people who get Peacock because they're Comcast cable subscribers or their Cox Communications subscribers. They said that there's 7 million highly engaged subscribers through that avenue. So that would come up to, 16 million subscribers who are using Peacock. So that's a lot more than 1.1 million in the US. So viewership is consequentially up for these premium live events.
So fascinating.
As you said, 25%, Money in the Bank was up. SummerSlam was up 30%. Extreme Rules was up 20%. The Saudi event in October up 75%. Survivor Series, almost 25%. And Royal Rumble this year versus the Royal Rumble of 2020, which is the last time they had fans in attendance, was up 45%. So a lot more viewership for that.
Very interesting stuff. Very different company. You know, a lot of Vince really did not play a part in this earnings call. I think he just did an intro.
He seldom does.
Yeah, that's it. It's a Nick Khan show.
That's right.
Brandon, man, thank you for coming on. This was fantastic. Love to have you on again.
Thank you for having me.
Wrestling awesome. Observer Live. We'll be back right after this. A lot to talk about, especially WWE and AEW TV, right after this. Andrew Zarian, Wrestling Observer Live on Sports Byline. We're trying to hit the post on that one. Couldn't do it. See, I'm getting rusty at this radio thing. Thank you to Brandon Thurston for coming on. That was awesome. We're going to have him on way more often when we have these earning calls and something big happening in TV and in ratings, because this is a big conversation right now. 2022 is going to be a very different professional wrestling year. You know, we are, knock on wood, out of this era of limited capacity shows and, you know, no audience. We've kind of exited that for the time being. I'm being very hopeful here, guys. I'm crossing my fingers. I'm hoping we got a very normal year. But, you know, this will be the first uninterrupted year for professional wrestling since 2019. The first year that AEW will be able to go on tour uninterrupted, stick with their program uninterrupted. So I'm very interested to see how it goes. But let's talk about some WWE TV stuff. And I want to talk about, and this is, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, right? And I'm going to talk about my own experience as someone that has been following professional wrestling since I was, 4 years old. My father was a bodybuilder. My grandfather was a professional bodybuilder. He, he would tell me about working out with Bruno when he was in New York and when he would travel. So, there is this connection with me in professional wrestling, and that's where my love for this comes. But, you know, it's getting a little harder to watch Raw, man. I know for some of you it's been hard, and I think I hung on for a little bit longer than you guys, but there's a lot of moving parts here. But let's talk about SmackDown before we go into anything. Paul Heyman, long segment in the beginning explaining why he turned on Lesnar. Goldberg came out. Bill Goldberg's back to challenge Roman at Elimination Chamber. We're finally getting that match that we didn't get at WrestleMania a couple years ago. Ronda Rousey picked Charlotte as the person she's challenging at WrestleMania. I don't think anybody wanted to see that match. I'd love to meet people that wanted that match over Becky. I know the plan is maybe do it next year with Becky, or maybe do it at SummerSlam with Becky, but isn't this the match that people wanted? You know, this delay to this. And you know what's interesting? You know, when I was talking to people about Ronda coming back, when I was told Ronda's going to be back and this is the plan, there was always a sense of urgency to do the Becky match. The one person that I spoke to has been fantastic with this stuff. And they mentioned, they said, you know, there's a ticking time clock on this because people's lives change, especially when you have kids, right? You have kids, your priorities shift. Listen, I got two, and I'm a different person than I am today than I was 6 years ago when I had my daughter. Everything shifts. And for Becky and for Ronda, that's their priority. Their family is their priority. And do they, you know, will Ronda want to do this in a year? The hope is yes. Will Becky want to do this in a year? The hope is yes. I find it bizarre that they're not going forward with this match. I'm a little disappointed by it. So right now, the two top matches set for WrestleMania, Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, possibly title for title. That would make the most sense out of this, because I don't know, if you don't have that title for title on the line, I don't know what makes this a very must-see match for night two. And Ronda Rousey and Charlotte. Okay. You know, that'll be interesting. Ronda wins. She's the champion. She does a couple pay-per-views, drops it to somebody. You know, we could figure that out. But I don't know, man. You know, I got to tell you, I'm not loving this. AEW Rampage on Friday, Adam Cole defeated Evil Uno in 2.5 minutes, cut a promo talking about how he's the man, he wants the title. You know, we're getting ready, we're setting that up, that Adam Cole becomes the number one contender. Sammy Guevara defeated Isaiah Cassidy to retain the TNT title in 9 minutes and 14 seconds. Thunder Rosa defeated Mercedes Martinez by DQ, and Ricky Starks defeated Jay Lethal to retain the FTW championship. That was an interesting match. I actually enjoyed that. I liked the whole show. It was a fine show. Listen, when you have a quick show like this, you can't go wrong. 1 hour, you get a couple matches in, you're done. Bam, you're finished. Next week's Dynamite, Inner Circle team meeting, see if they break up. MJF speaks after defeating CM Punk. Let's talk about that match for a second. We're going to backtrack a little bit. 40 minutes. Really cool match, man. That was the longest match that CM Punk has had in numerous years. I think he did two 60-minute draws with Samoa Joe in 2004, 2005. I can't think what the other longest match. His WWE longest match probably had to be almost 30 minutes. Had to be a 30-minute match. So this took a lot out of him, you know? This is a guy that hasn't wrestled in 7 years or so, did a 40-minute match. He looked great. Thought it was a really fun match. The only problem I had were, you know, a little bit too many wacky ref spots. If I were to criticize it. That Poison Rana looked great. The Pepsi Plunge looked great. You know, and this the purpose of this was to make MJF And I think they did a really good job at solidifying him as a top guy in that company, beating CM Punk in Chicago. I don't think people were very disappointed in that. I think people kind of, they were fine with that loss for CM Punk. I didn't see too many complaints about it, which is always a positive, you know, when people are happy with it. So next week, they're in Atlantic City, by the way. Hangman Page, Lance Archer for the AEW World title in a Texas death match in New Jersey. They could have just called it like a Jersey death match. Pretty much the same thing. You'd end up in Bar A for drinks. That's what would happen. And DJs for a couple drinks afterwards. Go to Belmar. The face of the Revolution ladder match qualified. So this is interesting here, right? Isaiah Cassidy versus a new AEW talent. Who will that be? If I were to put my chips on this, we're in Atlantic City, right? I'm going to gamble on this. I'm going to say it's Keith Lee. Congratulations to Keith Lee. Just got married also. Mia Yim and Keith Lee just got married. I'm hoping it's Keith Lee, and I'm hoping they let him become Keith Lee again. Because what we saw on WWE programming was not Keith Lee. Even NXT, you know, a lot of people said... I think for a lot of people that did not see Keith Lee on the Independence or see what he was doing in PWG or anywhere else he was, I think they were very satisfied with his NXT run. You know, I think there was a lot of stop and go. They waited a while to put him on TV and to elevate him. I want to see him unrestricted. I want to see Keith Lee become who I think a lot of us know who he is. Very interesting. I'm very hopeful that it's going to be him. And also an announcement by Tony Khan. Not sure what the announcement is. I know he made a post on Twitter that got a lot of people talking. There's a lot of words in that tweet. Never works out well. People get very confused when you write too much on Twitter. I don't know, man. I'm very excited for this. We're seeing some changes happen in that company. They very aggressively wanting to stay in that million viewership range. I think they need to when it comes to their TV. I think Keith Lee is going to be a huge help for their television product. I think a guy like him that's established and is strong and looks good and has a great character is going to do fantastic. But who else? Who else is next? We're going to find out, right? Let's talk about it. We got a couple minutes here before we go to break, but I want to talk about this because this was a topic of discussion on Mat Men, and it was... You know, what, when you talk to people, when you talk to WWE fans or you talk to AEW fans, why is one different than the other, right? And for me, as someone that loves professional wrestling, it really comes down to must-see TV. Is Raw must-see TV? Is AEW, is SmackDown must-see TV? And I have to tell you, for me right now, Raw is not must-see TV. As someone that covers professional wrestling regularly, talks about it, I shouldn't have to debate myself and say, do I want to watch this right now when it comes to Raw? That's the biggest problem I have. And I gave a great example, right? You could have a match on Dynamite and it could be, you know, Frankie Kazarian. Here's a great example. Jay Lethal and Ricky Starks. Is that a top tier match that you're going to stop and watch? No, it's not. But you know what it did do? It creates intrigue and it creates interest, and you want to see what's going to happen. AEW has done a really good job at convincing its viewership, which they should be, at telling them this is something you want to watch. Don't miss this. This is something special you're going to see. There's the FTW title involved, Jay Lethal, which you haven't seen much of. You got Ricky Starks, which is coming up in the company. Cool dude, as Danny Boy in our chat room says. Do you get that when you're watching Raw? When you have Cesaro, I'm giving an example. Cesaro and Lashley, right? So, let's say Lashley's a champion, and you got Cesaro challenging him. It's a main event match, which is never a main event match on Raw, right? You're gonna end up with a tag match. But let's say that's the match in the main event. Are you at 11 o'clock or 10:45 or 10:50? Interested enough to say, I gotta watch this? I feel bad saying no. I don't feel that way, and it has nothing to do with the people in the ring, because I think both of those individuals that I just brought up, hyper talented, unbelievably talented, but for whatever reason they have created this disconnect for that show. Because I watch SmackDown regularly, and they got great weeks, they got some okay weeks, you know, it's up and down just like anything else. Dynamite has some of those also. They're not, you know, it's not a perfect show, and it shouldn't be. Nothing is perfect. I don't expect everything that is done in a two-hour program to be catering to me. But my God, especially when it comes to Raw, do something for me. Do something. Make me want to see this. Give me a main event. Give me a big title change in the main event that's going to condition me to say, oh, wow, you know what? This happened last week. I got to see what happened. You know, we brought up the Attitude Era, and I know we got to go to a break in like 2 minutes here. But every week they would sign off with like Austin tied on the ropes, McMahon in his face spitting and yelling and being insane, signing off. And you're thinking, you're left there puzzled, and you're saying, holy moly, what just happened? I got to watch. I got to tune in next week at 9. 9 then, 8 now. I don't get that. I don't get that tingle anymore. And that is a problem when you're trying to build your audience. Because some weeks I watch, some weeks maybe not. I'll watch on DVR. I'll watch on Hulu where it's a 90-minute version. I'll catch it abridged. You know, I always end up watching it before my show. But I'm not watching it as a fan. I'm watching it because I'm doing the show. And that is a problem. SmackDown, like I said, I enjoy SmackDown. Their pay-per-views, generally, they're decent. They're fine. They're good. I don't have a problem with the pay-per-views. You got to create something that's going to make the average person, I was going to say average version, the average person tune in. And I'm not getting that on that side. And it's affecting my viewership of it. You know what? Listen, maybe they're going to change. Maybe they're going to do something cool. You know, I watch Rampage DVR'd on Saturdays. I watch Dynamite maybe an hour behind, but I end up catching it because I want to see what's happening. I'm interested in it. And some of that has to do with the fact that Dynamite is new. Dynamite is fresh. You haven't seen these matches 15 times. But on the other side, you got the New Day facing the Usos for the 4,000th time with the same... how many different finishes can you do for these guys, right? It's alarming to me that this is the state of their program on Mondays, because it is obviously not a flagship product. And even on SmackDown, when is the last time we got a major shift, a major pop, a title change, a devastating ending? We really don't get that. It's a Broadway production presented to an audience that's into it. Very interesting. I don't know. Well, we got a couple minutes after this break. We're going to be back wrapping it up. Wrestling Observer Live, Andrew Zarian. We'll be right back after this. Sports Byline USA. Wrestling Observer Live, Andrew Zarian, wrapping it up here on a Sunday. You know, that last segment took a lot out of me. 12 minutes. a lot going on in professional wrestling. By the way, this week, if you want to check out some of the other shows that I do a fantastic show with Garrett Gonzalez on Wrestling Observer called We're Live Pal. Denise Alcedo was on, but Denise's last week. But guess what? We're working on something new here. We're going to rebrand it. Denise will be back. We're going to do some changes. Also, Matt Men Podcast every Thursday over on my channel, Matt Men Podcast on YouTube. You can catch us live there. And of course, on the F4W video feed on Twitch, F4W Video. You can follow us there, and you can follow me at Andrew Zarian on Twitter. A lot of good wrestling. Looking forward to it this week. Big surprise for AEW. Big announcement by Tony Khan. Listen, if you want to take this bet, I'm going to say, side with me. It's Keith Lee. All right? We're going to go with Keith Lee on this. I'd love to see someone else. That'd be an interesting surprise. What if it's Shane? Guys, you know what? Forget it. It's Shane McMahon, all right? He's showing up. Shane is going to show up on AEW TV like he's in Panama City holding and doing a simulcast. I'm willing to bet there are many people out there that will be disappointed if it's not Shane. They believe it's going to be him. This week, by the way, we're going to be talking about more about the debacle of Royal Rumble because a lot more information came out. I believe I posted it on Twitter that a lot of the issue had to do with Bad Bunny. There was a lot of confusion with Bad Bunny that caused an uproar about when he was supposed to go up. Randy Orton's music was supposed to hit, but Shane's hit, so he had to go out. It was a total disaster, and we'll spend some more time on this. next week when I kind of organize the news that came out of here. But I do not expect to see Shane McMahon there for at least a little bit after everything that happened with that show. Guys, I had a blast here. Brandon Thurston, thank you to him for coming on, talking about WWE earnings. Thank you for listening to my 12-minute rant about WWE programming. And we'll see you all next week, guys. Wrestling Observer Live.